Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Senate Committee on Healthcare. This is our last official committee meeting this session. I would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 4018A. And Representative Salinas, if you'd come forward, and if Mitch comes, Representative Greenlee comes, then we'll have him testify too.
Chair Monis Anderson, Vice Chair DeBoer, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Andrea Salinas. I'm the representative for House District 38, Lake Oswego and Southwest Portland. HB 4018A establishes expectations while retaining flexibility that CCOs are designed to have. The bill does four simple things. It adds transparency to the decision-making process of these large publicly funded entities. It establishes the expectations that CCOs reinvest in their community, a practice that many of them are already engaged in, but it remains unmeasured. This affords stakeholders the opportunity to design appropriate benchmarks for targeted, measurable investments. It establishes a minimum of 120 days to give notice of non-renewal and provides ample notice to members and providers in the event of a transition. And lastly, it allows for greater community membership on governing boards. I'd like to speak briefly to the process that got us here today. As you all know, the bill is 3 years in the making. In 2016, we had HB 4100. In 2017, we had HB 2122. And today, we have a modest and necessary proposal that received bipartisan support on the House floor. The original version of HB 4018 contained several provisions that were amended away after multiple rounds of stakeholder and member engagement. One of these changes includes walking away from applying public meeting laws to CCOs. We had heard concerns about compliance and engaged CCOs to find an alternative that struck the right balance between public accountability and maintaining a private enterprise. The result is the current language found in Section 2. Coordinated care organizations provided this language. In fact, the majority of CCOs believe this is the right alternative, as evidenced by the sign-on letter that I posted to OLIS. Colleagues, this is the bottom line. When Family Care decided not to renew their contract in the final hours of last year, I was very troubled to hear from panicked patients and providers who could have had just days to transition to a new CCO. Thankfully, the Oregon Health Authority and Family Care were able to come to terms for a 30-day contract extension. The confusion and misinformation that plagued the transition, even with that contract extension, was preventable. Passing HB 4018A will prevent providers and patients from being blindsided. We need a window into that decision-making process of these publicly funded institutions. They're too large and their service is too critical for them to continue operating in the dark. Thank you, and I urge your aye vote.
Are there questions? Thanks, Representative Salinas. Charlie Swanson and Jared.
Jesse
O'Brien. It's a carbon copy, sorry.
Hello, Chair Monis Anderson and members of the committee. I'm Charlie Swanson. I'm a healthcare and democracy advocate from Lane County. I'm also speaking on behalf of the 27,000 members of Healthcare for All Oregon today in favor of House Bill 4018. Coordinated care organizations in Oregon serve about as many people as K-12 education, with roughly the same size budget, with public financing of the same size. So with such an important duty to appropriately use public money to pay others for providing health care to so many Oregonians, it seems clear that transparency and accountability are necessary. The Oregon Health Policy Board made a number of suggestions regarding transparency and accountability, and these recommendations need to be implemented. The most straightforward and easy to implement way to provide transparency is to require CCOs to have open governance meetings. And as you just heard Representative Salinas describe, that process is slightly different than what's in current Oregon open meeting laws, but it's still a good open process. The procedure, there have been several examples of CCOs in Oregon using public money that is supposed to be used for health care for low-income Oregonians in questionable ways. And Senator Beyer can probably fill you in if you aren't aware of some of those details. It's difficult enough to get entities that must be transparent to use public money appropriately. It's that much more difficult to get entities that can hide their governance decisions to do so. There has been some discussion of increasing the roles of CCOs beyond the Oregon Health Plan. A way to ensure strong opposition to such an expansion of CCO membership is to keep governance of CCOs closed by not passing House Bill 4018. Please protect the use of taxpayer money as best you can. Passing House Bill 4018 is part of this process. Thanks for your efforts to help CCOs meet the vision of the legislation that established them. CCOs should be, and I'll quote from the original legislation, local community-based organizations or statewide organizations with community-based participation in governance or any combination of the two. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Mona Sanderson and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jesse O'Brien. I'm the policy director with OSPIRG, which is the Oregon State Public Interest Research Group, a statewide consumer advocacy group, here in strong support of HB 4018A. We think this is a small, modest, but very important step forward for Oregon's efforts to transform the healthcare delivery system through the coordinated care organizations. We think this will help make our coordinated care model more genuinely responsive to consumer and community needs and also more accountable to Oregon taxpayers. Representative Salinas already described very ably described the basic things that this bill will do, but I think it is worth emphasizing that one of the most important things I think this bill will advance is really about safeguarding the use of taxpayer dollars and making sure that the public is there at the table when decisions are made about what's really billions and billions of our own dollars, both by creating more openness in governance by ensuring public access to meetings, but also by making sure that the funds are spent where they should be, i.e. on improving the health of Oregonians, and also opening up CCO boards to enable greater community representation than would actually be allowed under current law. We think those are all important provisions, and certainly the family care situation showed that it's important to take some steps to ensure a more orderly transition in the event a CCO opts not to renew its contract, because it can be very disruptive for consumers. In the family care situation, I think it was handled very well, but I think this bill will help ease those transitions if they happen in the future. And there's certainly still a lot of work to be done to ensure that the CCO model lives up to its promise for Oregon consumers. And this bill by itself certainly doesn't get us all the way there. It will not fundamentally transform the healthcare delivery system in the state. OSPIRG certainly has a lot of ideas about more things we'd like to see done. But right now, the Oregon Health Policy Board and the Oregon Health Authority are in the process of looking at standards for future CCO contracting, and we hope that's the forum where a lot of those bigger policy advances are going to be made. What this bill does is it, in my opinion, will help create the conditions for that effort to be successful. It makes some minor structural changes that will better empower local communities across the state to hold CCOs accountable for delivering on what we're all trying to get them to do, and transform the delivery system to bring down costs, improve care, and improve the health of Oregonians. So thanks for consideration. I urge an aye vote.
Do you have questions? Thank you very much. Courtney Johnson, Josh Ballack, and Phil, is it Greenhill?
He's not here yet, so.
Chair Mona Sanderson, members of the committee, for the record, Courtney Johnston here today on behalf of the Coalition for a Healthy Oregon, which represents seven CCOs across the state. I want to thank you for the opportunity to provide public testimony on the language in this bill today. Since it's been adopted, we've had the opportunity to review it, and I want to be clear, COHO is not opposed to enhancing transparency. We have historically supported that, but we are ultimately concerned that the public meeting language in this bill is so unclear that we have to choose to interpret it a certain way, and either way, we are fearful that we'd be out of compliance with statute. So because this bill requires all decision-making meetings to be open to the public, and because the term decision is defined so broadly, we do not believe the provisions of this bill allow for an executive session the way we would need to conduct business. CCO boards make decisions around privileged information all the time. As an example, boards are required to make credentialing decisions on quality of care matters, which constitute peer review, and are thus privileged under separate statutes. So additionally, protected health information is often a part of those discussions. And as written, this bill would require disclosure of any such information, and any discussions on it would need to be made, posted to our website. And we've heard it said that we should just change our bylaws to limit what constitutes a decision so that only the decisions we want to make public are actually done in public. And that idea that we would change our internal bylaws in order to skirt this legislation is not only fundamentally inappropriate, but frankly, it's not really possible because, number one, we have to have our bylaws comply with statute. So changing them in order to address the inconsistencies is not acceptable. And as it opens us up to interpreting what it is you consider should be done in public. But more importantly, it does not matter to the courts if we have internal documents changing the meaning of decision. It does not matter to the courts if the drafter of this bill thinks we can keep protected health information protected under this language. The courts look at the statute first, and the statute says every meeting in which a decision is made must be made in public, and minutes from every single meeting, regardless of what protected information is discussed, are required to be posted on our website. And under this bill, those minutes must reflect the true discussion at the meetings. So are we to interpret that this protected health information shouldn't be included? It's just not clear to us in this bill, and we're concerned about what position this puts us in if we choose to interpret that. So at the end of the day, we're just here to ask that you have a real conversation about what information you believe is necessary to make public that isn't already made public. Because when those discussions have taken place in public, in a transparent environment with stakeholder input, the solutions has never been to require public meetings for a private state contractor. They have centered around enhancing the multitude of public accountability already inherent in the system. And it's our hope that this body is willing to take up a conversation on that and not pass this problematic language. Thank you.
Representative Greenlick, or?
No, I'll have you testify, and then I'll bring up Representative Greenlick.
Okay. For the record, Josh Ballack, All Care Health. One of the things I was honored to be a part of kind of the founding of the CCOs and kind of as they were kind of coming together. And one of the things that I got to witness was this merging of physical, mental, and dental health under one organization and how complex and how difficult that was to do. You had stakeholders who traditionally had always had problems working together, hospitals working with independent physicians, dental and mental health not necessarily trusting people. And so as we were coming up with the CCOs, we wanted to make sure that everybody was going to have a voice and that there would be a level of trust and transparency inside of these organizations that were going to take massive financial risk in order to make these things, these CCOs work. You know, and I think that that's one thing that gets lost inside of this. These entities are at full financial risk, which means if we're given $10 million from the state and it comes in at $11 million, we've got to figure out a way to come up with that extra $1 million. So that's why we ended up setting up these systems so that you could have these tough conversations to be able to build consensus, be able to make the right business moves. But we also mandated that the boards be made up very specifically, that they include all of the critical parts of the delivery system, that two members of the public would be on those boards, actively practicing providers would be on those boards, behavioral health would have a stay, and then community advisory council members would have a seat on the board. So that's what we ended up setting up. That helped actually build trust. But I think what's important to remember is that trust isn't necessarily like there to stay. And still in a lot of cases, CCOs still have competing entities that are actually there. You've got a hospital that maybe works really well with the CCO or with the local physicians in one case. But, you know, they're competing on the commercial side on these other sides. So there are these types of very difficult conversations that tend to happen. And I think, you know, and these are still siloed entities as well. So that's why we set this thing up the way that it was set up. But also, we also said we wanted to make sure that there was a community and member engagement. So we created the community advisory councils. So those are made up over 50% of members. They include the counties actually helped get them started to make sure that we were having non-health health delivery system groups like public health engaged inside of that system. All of those meetings are open to the public. At the current moment, they are, and people are able to find out kind of what's going on and be given the input. And I think one of the things that I saw was the Oregon Health Policy Board did a series of town halls over 3 months all across the state. And I was actually at one in Medford when that ended up happening. And what we saw, what I saw there and what the report was that they were looking for more opportunities for CCOs or for the public to interact with the CCOs. And so what one of the recommendations the Oregon Health Policy Board made that we would support fully, and I believe all CCOs have endorsed, is that there would be one governance meeting a year, which would be governance and the community care or coordinated care or the community advisory councils, sorry, too many C's, merged together, having one public meeting. And I think that this would do two things. One, it would open up an opportunity for people to be able to present ideas, but equally as important, the governance board and the members of the community advisory council could actually trade business cards, build a relationship that's actually able to help move that forward to make sure that there's transparency and connectiveness, because that's really at the end of the day what this is about. It's about building trust. It's about building relationships. And but at the end of the day, this is also a full at-risk companies that are taking on this Medicaid risk, which is beneficial not only to the communities we serve, but also takes an awful lot of that financial risk off of the state. So with that, thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
The original had regular that CCOs would have to meet regular public meeting, state public meeting laws. And I asked legislative council to tell me the difference between what is in the A and Gross versus the original bill. And she says that this what we're dealing with is a public meeting that really has a very large loophole in it that would allow a lot of discussion to happen, not in a public setting, but, you know, behind closed doors, so to speak. It's just that the decision, the final decision, would need to be made in public. Also, I talked to some other CCOs. They do have, I know you alluded to it, they do have bylaws, but the bylaws are very prescriptive on what they consider decisions that should be made in the public and decisions that should not be made in the public. So that's another avenue that a CCO could take. And the fact that you are taking a risk. I mean, you are taking a risk, but you are being given, well, you mentioned the figure, $10 million. And when we're giving CCOs that amount of money, in my eyes, it's truly extremely important that you're transparent and accountable for that money. So that's where I'm coming from. And Senator Beyer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I agree. I find it interesting that the vast majority, 8 CCOs, have signed on in supporting this bill, while some others I recognize a few have not. The language, quite frankly, as the chair was speaking to, is not artfully drafted in terms of it's not entirely clear what's covered there. I think there's some room there, unlike our open meeting statute. I do think there is a need for certain decisions. You mentioned credentialing. I think generally human resource kinds of questions probably needs to be done in an executive-like session, similar to what other public agencies, but it's not clear here. This does speak to only final decisions. Only the meetings where a final decision is being made has to be made. That language kind of speaks to, in current law, what has to happen after an executive session where you only have to announce the decision at the end of the day. I'm not completely comfortable with that language, but I'm interested, Madam Chair, in hearing how the department would interpret that or what their read on that is before we get done with this. But in general, I am very supportive of the need for having more transparency. I think that this is a huge public investment, and I think the public needs to be concerned if we're going to continue to build credibility and move these forward in a broader fashion as Governor Kitzhaber envisioned. We probably need that. So I will be supporting the bill in general, but I do have some concerns about the way the language is drafted.
Chairman Sanderson, I would also point out that there is an emergency clause that was put on top of this, and I believe the next panel after Representative Greenlick is going to talk about doing rulemaking. It would be incumbent, I think, to move forward before this goes into effect that those rules actually be in place. Otherwise, you're going to have an awful lot of board meetings spending an awful lot of time talking about what they legally can and cannot do and not focusing on improving the health of the community, which I can say, and Senator Beyer, I want to say this. We are here because we really want to make sure that our boards, which actually I have seen remarkable things come out of, maintain what they are doing and being able to really transform healthcare. And we see this as something that could end up putting us back. That's the only reason that we're here. This isn't about less transparency. It's about making sure the good things that we have been able to do inside of the CCOs are continuing to be able to deliver, which has improved outcomes and reduced costs for the state. We should be really proud of what we've accomplished with the Coordinated Care Organization, and we're just here to make sure that that's protected.
And Chairman Sanderson, Senator Beyer, I just want to be clear that we're not opposed to transparency. I think there's just a different opinion on the CCOs about how this could be implemented and whether it's problematic or not. All of our financial information, all of our financials, everything is public and it's available to the public. So I just want to make sure that's on the record as well.
We are also routinely audited by both the Oregon Health Authority and CMS and other entities on a routine basis. So there is transparency and accountability that has not been discussed today that I think is important to put on the record.
Again, Madam Chair, I would point out that the vast majority of the CCOs, 8, have endorsed the policy, the bill.
Thank you. And before I call OHA up, I would like Representative Greenlink to come forward. He's been working on this for a long time and has really narrowed it down to 4 little things.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It was nice to sit there and listen to that nonsense that you've just heard, but the fact is, the real issue is, these people spend $9 billion of our money and love to do it in the dark. We need to get that out in the open. The language I have in front of you was recommended, the part about open meetings, by one of the CCOs. I took the language they suggested and directly put it in when they had problems with some elements of the public meeting laws, such as accidental creating a quorum by being out in public or something. They wanted to bring it down very specifically to the question of what's out in the open and what's not. It is urgent, as the Health Policy Board listening session said, that we get transparency, that these decisions be made in the light and not in the dark, and I think we have a simple model here for doing that. This is a long way from what we've been trying to get to bring this transparency and to bring a rational basis to the way the CCOs work. We've modified in this bill, given more range on what the board membership can look like in the next 6 years. We've produced some things about what happens when a CCO decides it's not in their best interest to continue in this line of business. The fourth part of the bill, it's very important we learn from what happened in the family care problem to what happens as we go forward. This provides much more reasonable kinds of notice if a CCO wants to move out. It also includes how reserves can be spent, again, in language directly from one of the CCOs. We've tried to incorporate their ideas in this as much as possible. We need to get this bill done in this session. because OHA, I guess you'll hear from them soon, OHA is creating the RFA to have the plans, these or other plans competing for the ability to spend some of that $9 billion and to take care of the health of our members in the Oregon Health Plan. And I'll be happy to answer any questions, but it's time to do this.
Thank you. Thank you for keep plugging away and bringing this back. Are there questions for it? I do have a question, and I brought this to your attention. We have the A26s that basically requires the OHA to be fully transparent about expenditures and administering the medical assistant program, establishing global budgets for CCOs, and to make readily available to the public documents, financial data, and healthcare utilization data considered by the authority in calculating global budgets, medical loss ratios, administrative costs, and earnings, and all documentation that the authority submits to CMS in seeking federal approval. They want to have access to that, and that the authority shall use accurate and uniform standards to measure and report the information.
I think that's a fine bill for the 2019 session. You ought to introduce it as a committee bill at that point.
Okay.
These negotiations have been just going on too long, and this relates to the CCOs and how they behave, how OHA behaves. You and I will both keep an eye on them as we go forward.
That's right.
Madam Chair, can I make a comment about another item you have on the agenda, HJR 203?
Can you hold that, because we're going to address that right after.
Sure,
after
happy
this,
to.
If you don't mind.
I don't mind at all.
Thanks. Senator DeBoer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, and Ashland used to run their own hospital, and at some point in the past, we transferred it to a semi-public hospital to avoid the full transparency, with Ashland being the sole owner, the sole stockholder. And it, what we ran into, that a lot of the confidential information in the operation of the hospital was violating HIPAA and put the hospital in a non-competitive situation. And I don't know if you're aware of the full story of why that was done, but you know, it's what happened, and we ended up selling the hospital here, what, 3 years ago to Asante. But it was an interesting transition, and this bill kind of tends that. I don't know if it's good for the short sessions, my personal opinion, because I think there's undue problems with it, and I'd really like to hear from OHA, yeah. But it may be improper to have them testify. I don't know about the things that we're not understanding of what those board meetings have, and I sit on the quality committee for City of Ashland's Hospital, and a lot of the information we had there was information that could not be freely discussed with
think
the public there.
So the quality issues are always.
And for the record, you need to state your name.
I'm sorry, I never did state my name.
No,
I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlick, House District 33, and. Mr. DeBoer, I don't know what happened. I assume your predecessor was down there keeping control of everything. So I left Ashland for him. But I do know that that there are hospitals changing status now. We have a hospital that's going to change from a DRG hospital to an A or B hospital in the West Metropolitan area in Portland. They make these decisions for what is their own best interest. We need some very basic change, I think, in the healthcare system that we've been working on for some time. This bill, however, is not a short session bill. We worked on it all through the 2017 session, got very close to the end, decided to carry it over to finish it in this session, and this is the finishing up of what we had done in that time. We are on OHA's case, and we'll stay on OHA's case. I'm very pleased with the new management they have and their ability to try and make things more transparent. They do need to be transparent there as well. I'm not sure I answered your question.
Follow up. Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. And we all agree that the system needs some vast improvement, and I certainly appreciate Patrick Allen taking on the OHA, and there's lots of things we do to both DHS and OHA, and I'm happy with the two new directors. And I think that we'll start moving forward. So thank you.
I feel that way very much.
All right. Thank you. And if you just hold us, you know, we'll call you back up when we get to the next topic.
Thank you.
Okay. Did Phil Greenhill come in? Yeah. And then we're going to ask OHA to come up.
Good.
Oh, goodness. Thank you for your patience. I just drove in from Coos Bay. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Phil Greenhill. I am the CEO for Western Oregon Advanced Health, one of the 15 CCOs. I am CCO for Southwestern Oregon IPA. I'm president of Coalition for a Healthier Oregon, COHO, and I co-chair with two other co-chairs the collaboration of the 15 CCOs that worked last session diligently to help plug the over $900 million budget deficit we had. So I thank you for allowing me to speak today on behalf of some of the CCOs. I picked up a book when I left home today called Community Conversations by Paul Bourne. I suggest everyone reading this book. It's quoted on the cover as saying, "I work from the firm belief that whatever the problem community is, the answer." Community Conversations teaches us how to make that statement true. We've had over the last 5 or 6 years, literally thousands of conversations in our community about healthcare transformation, change, health determinants, and most of all, a lot of the inequities that exist in our various communities as we strive to deliver health care to some of the more needy and lower income members of our state. It seems, though, as we've gone down this huge social experiment, that we continually, especially in this building, about every session, continue to fix what necessarily is not broke. The transparency that exists today is, I don't know how you would multiply it or sum it up, but it's significantly different than when we started 5 years ago with what was then 15 managed care organizations, 30 or more mental health organizations, 12 or 15 dental organizations that have come together in collaboration day to serve their communities. Our Community Advisory Council itself has in attendance every month 25 to 30 people. That council is only made up of about 15 members on the consumer side. It's chaired by a consumer. It's open to the public. Our meetings now on our CCO level are open to the public. This bill just really seems like more overkill, more unnecessary legislation, and not necessarily striving to the openness or the transparency we were all really striving for. I think that can be handled through the new administration at OHA and through our regulations and give it a chance to come to fruition under CCO 2.0. It seems we always get in a hurry and the cow gets out of the barn and we try to turn it into a horse when it's already loose. And I would say that if we can give you got to deal with the accent there, Senator.
It's not the accent. I'm just admiring your metaphor there, Mr. Greenhill.
So
a little more complex than we usually get here.
So I think if we look at CCO 2.0, we got an opportunity to go into the next generation, the next transition of where we want healthcare transformation to go in this state. But it seems we always don't give things time to mature. We want to push the envelope and see how fast we can change things, again, when things are not necessarily broken. And I would suggest to this committee and to the House that we allow Director Allen an opportunity to look at 2.0, as he will with the communities, as we'll listen to different communities, we'll listen to the CCOs, we'll listen to the Oregon Health Policy Board, And last year, the Oregon Health Policy Board didn't feel that there was a need for further transformation after they did a roadshow for the whole year. They thought that the transparency on the local level of the CCOs was taking place and is moving forward every day. We don't necessarily have to legislate everything. We can challenge our communities to face these issues. I believe they're doing so today. And I would just ask for some patience on our part in this short session. Let's work through the summer on CCO 2.0. Let's work with the new leadership of OHA. Let's change what we need to. Come into a long session where we can actually deliberate things, have some time to look at it, and do it right. So questions. I would be open to any questions the committee might have.
Thank you. And thank you for coming.
You're welcome.
A long drive from Coos Bay.
We make it often. So.
I visit Senator Joanne Berger often, so I know what that trip's like.
Senator Berger is one of my favorite people and a real Southern lady.
Yes, she is.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask OHA to come forward, Patrick, Allen, and Jeremy. Could you address the public meetings piece, the emergency clause, and how this maybe dovetails into CCO 2.0?
Certainly.
Whatever it's called.
Certainly. Chairman Otis Anderson, members of the committee, Patrick Allen, director of the Oregon Health Authority. I'm joined for answering difficult questions by Jeremy Vandehey, who's the acting director of health policy and analytics. There's been some question about do we have rulemaking authority around these topics, and I think the answer certainly is yes. ORS 413-042 gives us pretty broad rulemaking authority to implement the laws that we're charged with administering, and this law is certainly among those. And so whether through contracts in the development of CCO 2.0 or in regular rulemaking, I think we've got ample authority to deal with some of these kinds of issues. Doing so in the face of decisions you have or haven't made sometimes gets a little bit more challenging, just from a practical standpoint. That said, it's also true that should you pass this bill, we've got ample authority, both in temporary rules and in permanent rules, to provide interpretations and details where there are questions or things that aren't clear. There's really only the one defined term that borrows the meaning for decision under the public records law. The rest of the terms are inherently undefined, and we would have rulemaking ability to try to define terms and provide procedures and those kinds of things. So either direction, through CCO 2.0 or through rulemaking related specifically to this bill, I think we could provide a fair amount of clarity.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Pat, I appreciate that you have administrative rules, and frankly, if we adopt this, I'm glad you do. The guiding language here is governing bodies should be an open, in which decisions are made final. That's about as broad as you can get, and it certainly, I think, creates a lot of room for you to decide what that is. One of the things that would concern me here is, as people have testified, there are things that normally in most contexts you would consider to be in an executive session. Certainly any human resource discussion would be that way. I think credentialing probably falls there. Probably where there indeed is trade secrets, although I will say that I think that term is thrown about way too freely in terms of this. The intent here is clearly that the general operations should be open to the public view, and I guess the default is, unless there's a real clear reason why they shouldn't be, I would hope you would interpret it that way if we pass this.
Chairman Otis Anderson, Senator Beyer. I'm an economist, not an attorney, and Jeremy's an attorney, but not your attorney, so we're going to try to avoid practicing law. But some of you know, for fun in my spare time, I serve on my local school board. And in that context, I'm very familiar with executive sessions and public meetings. And it's interesting that this bill is silent on executive session. It's important to note in the public meetings law around executive session, you are allowed to have presentations presentations about information, but you're not allowed to have deliberation or make decisions. And it's that have deliberation or make decisions that I think is quite a bit more restrictive than what's envisioned in this bill. And yet, even in that and you're required to allow the press to be present, even if they can't report on the materials. Those are all things that aren't covered in this bill. Even in that context, let's take personnel issues, which we deal with quite regularly in a school board setting. We'll have an annual meeting where there's discussion about whether to offer contracts to new teachers, and we'll have very frank presentations from staff about the strengths and weaknesses and issues related to teachers prior to that decision. And we'll go through all that material in a private setting that's not subject to public disclosure, but then go into a regular business meeting and have a list of people who are having contracts offered to them and people who aren't, and make that decision. And so that's a process that, A, is very manageable, and B, I think can be dealt with in rulemaking.
Madam Chair, that's, if I may, Pat, that's exactly the kinds of thing that I was thinking of, and I think I've had similar experiences on local government committees and others. Certainly the trade secrets, while I was chair of the PUC, we threw that web a number of times in terms of what can you and can't you release, and I understand that. Although I will note for the record that for all practical purposes, CCOs are monopolies within the territories they serve, and so there is a greater degree of protection of the public interest and transparency that is appropriate.
Depending on the territory, yes.
Yes.
Ms. Steiner-Hayward, and then Senator Canote.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know who to ask this question to, but since we're talking about the public meetings part of this, Mr. Allen, I'm going to ask you. Page 1 of the bill, line 6 and 7 says, as used in this section, decision has the meaning given that term in ORS 192.610. ORS 192.610 says, decision means any determination, action, vote, or final disposition upon a motion, proposal, resolution, order, ordinance, or measure on which a vote of the governing body is required at any meeting at which a quorum is present. Now, personally, I would think that it's the kind of final substantive decisions that we're talking about in this bill. But technically, one could argue that that's a motion to adjourn, because the quorum has to be present to have a motion to adjourn, and the committee or the board has to vote on that. I just need some confidence that you're going to be, you know, analogous to the example you gave about the school board, that a motion to adjourn isn't, you know, or a motion for, you know, an agreement to offer contracts to those teachers, as it were, isn't considered the kind of motion that would make all of those meetings public meetings.
Chairman Sanderson, Senator Steiner-Hayward, I don't want to get over my skis in terms of legal interpretation, for sure. Again, I'll go back to my experience on a school board. At a meeting where we vote on stuff, that meeting is open to the public, right? And
right.
At our particular school board, we don't vote to adjourn. The chair adjourns the meeting when we get to the end of business. I think the question of interpretation that we'll need some guidance from DOJ on is what kinds of things. There was some language that you read from the underlying public meetings statute around the substance of the decision. Can a board structure itself so that something like a meeting, a move to adjourn or to have lunch or whatever, doesn't require a vote? And we'll need some guidance on that kind of a level of detail.
Thank you.
Senator Canote.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Director Allen, a lot of us want to support this bill and believe in transparency. And I would trust you more than I would trust a lot of agency folks to try to come up with the proper rules. It just feels, though, like we're rushing this. And so my question really is, what happens if this bill doesn't pass? I mean, what are the ramifications, negative ramifications especially, if this bill doesn't pass right now?
Chairman Sanderson, Senator Canope, I think it's the, I hesitate in my chair to use this word, but I will, political implication of the challenge that you face as an agency to go do rulemaking in the face of the legislative body having decided not to do something and go do it instead by rule. That's a habit I try to stay out of. to let you deliberate on what you think the overall policy should be. And so I would be more hesitant tomorrow were you to take that action than I would have been yesterday in either CCO 2.0 or in regular rulemaking to head down a path that you guys have considered multiple times and decided not to do. Now, that's not to say that we wouldn't go ahead and do it that way, and we're going to go through a robust process through CCO 2.0 that's a publicly engaged process and go through that. But that I guess that would be the most direct implication I would take.
Madam Chair, just a comment. I know this is our last day as a committee, but it seems like that there are some things that could be clarified more, and I would prefer that we do that before we send this on. So if we have to send this to rules, I would certainly be willing to do that, but not quite comfortable at this point voting yes on this bill in its current state, and because I think there's going to need to be some legislative cleanup on this, and I'm not sure this was quite what the short sessions were designed for.
Senator Steiner.
I know.
Oh,
Senator
Lieber.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Madam Chair and Senator Knob, I appreciate your concerns. This bill had a substantial amount of consideration over in the House during the 2017 session, and I know that Representative Greenlick did a significant amount of work on this in the interim. And while there still are some concerns, I would argue that a move towards public transparency, which will increase public confidence that we're spending taxpayer dollars wisely, is an important thing for us to do. There is no doubt that we will need another iteration of advancing the work of our CCOs and refining them so that they function in the most optimal ways, that they're the most cost-effective they can be. And there's a lot of confidence, but I think we need to have some more public confidence. I have heard stories that would curl your hair from a wide range of CCOs about the lack of transparency about decisions on how they're engaging with different healthcare providers. There's no opportunity for the public to offer any input on this and to reflect the needs of the community. The community advisory board's positions are really ignored. And I find that highly problematic. So increasing transparency in this way, I think, offers us an opportunity to be confident that the intent of the legislature in establishing the CCOs is accomplished, and that you and I have some confidence that our taxpayer dollars are being used appropriately to serve the needs of the quarter of Oregonians who get their health care this way. I do appreciate your concerns, but I'm just...
Madam Chair, if I might respond. You probably haven't noticed, but my hair curls just when it gets long.
As does mine, so, but it was a metaphor.
Yes, I understand. And I totally agree, and I think Representative Greenlick has worked really hard on this legislation, and he makes an excellent point that when $9 billion is at stake, we want transparency, and I think we all agree with that. What I'm just saying is I think you can get good bipartisan support on this if we wordsmith this out. I think we have the time to do that. I don't know that we have the time in this committee because it sounds like we're going to get shut down, but I think we do in rules. So I guess what I'm saying is let's take the last extra measure that we can before we send this product on. So that was really my only point, because I do agree with the good representative or good senator, excuse me, sitting next to me. So I hope that we can do that. I know we're in a bit of a hurry, though.
Yes, Senator Beyer.
Just a comment. The fact that we're looking at the 26th Amendment doesn't suggest to me this issue has not been worked a lot in this session, let alone previous sessions. I actually think the two things that are really clear here is that the people who worked on it wanted to make sure that we didn't lay on top of the CCOs the existing open meetings requirements, specifically lines 17 through 18, take that out. But I think what we're left with was an intent of the legislature, if you will, to promote transparency. And I think it's given the complexity of healthcare issues, and I've thought a lot about this, having served also on a hospital board, I feel comfortable leaving it up to the experts at OHP to try and take the intent of the legislature and work it into reasonable rules. And we certainly will have a chance to take a look at this again in future sessions if we're uncomfortable with that. But I think that's the appropriate place probably to do this. With all of the reservations that I expressed earlier, but I will tell you, in my area, and I realize it's only one CCO, there's certainly a whole lot of concerns after sale of the CCO by members of the public, and both, frankly, in the medical side as well as the general public. An issue. It's probably one of the top issues of the last year. So I think there is a need for looking at that, and there is a need given the magnitude and the seriousness of the issue that we need to have more transparency of how we're dealing with the public's money and how that service is being provided.
I've been communicating with the Health Policy Board because they do look at policy and they do address issues that are in this bill, and I know in my conversations with Zeke Smith, he went along with everything that is in this bill. I know that in previous bills there were some issues that they weren't sure of, but at least with the Health Policy Board, I've been informed that this bill meets their muster. So, any other discussion? Do you want to present anything more?
Madam Chair, I think we need transparency everywhere, so there's no question about that. But I would hope that the new director has only been there, I think, 7 months now, or maybe a little bit less
six.
Than that.
Who's counting, right?
Not till Thursday, Mr. Allen.
I do not want to tie his hands with the bill, but I also wanted to understand that we want to increase transparency throughout our whole health system, but for the reasons that Ashland did transfer their hospital to the sole ownership by a city. And I've run hundreds of meetings as school board chair and mayor of Ashland, and under the rules of open and closed meetings. And I can tell you that it does tie your hands. And I think that with privacy issues, I'd like to challenge Director Allen that I don't think this is ready to pass. And sometimes a number of amendments might mean that maybe it's not a good idea to start with, and we keep trying to pound a round peg into a square hole. But I'd like to express support for Director Allen to work on these issues without guidance from us at this point.
All right. We're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4018A and open a work session on House Bill 4018.
Chairman Anderson.
18A.
Sorry. I move House Bill 4018A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Steiner Hayward moves House Bill 4018A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Comments, discussion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for reminding me that I'm in the minority. Apparently, we're not going to work on the bill anymore.
I think that this particular bill.
Right.
No.
Okay.
Any other discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Byer.
Yes.
You always Senator have to Knope. Be first. That
no.
Seems unfair. Senator Steiner Hayward.
Aye.
First. Vice Chair DeBoer.
No.
Chair Mona Sanderson.
Aye. Motion carries and.
I'll carry it.
I will carry the bill. With that, did I close the
That's
work session on House Bill 4018? And colleagues, we're not opening up a work session on HJR 203A. The Senate doesn't have a pathway to get this bill off of the floor, and I know that Representative Greenlick would like to come forward to just say a few comments. Could you do that, please?
What happened to this?
Do you want to say some comments on
Nothing happened to
that. HJR 203?
No.
I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlick, House District 33. I I'm sorry to hear you make that decision. I was hoping I could convince you to move the bill to the Rules Committee while we got a bit more information that I think would have been helpful in deliberation. I trust our citizens of this state. And this motion, this resolution, was an attempt to ask them what they think the direction that we should move in as we try and deal with the problems in the healthcare system. I trust the voters, and I think it's appropriate to ask them. And I'm surprised that three times the Senate now has had the opportunity to ask the voters what they think of this issue, and this would be the third time in a row that the Senate's failed to even take it to the floor. I trust the citizens to help us make these decisions. We go to town halls, and we hear at town halls the anxiety that's going on in the state around health care, around people's health care. The anxiety that they're expressing because they see the federal government is beginning to back off the support for providing health care for its citizens. I believe the state of Oregon is going to have to take significant action in 2019 in terms of dealing with, are we going to move forward to provide, to assure that health care is given to the citizens of the state? I believe we would have a better opportunity to make wise decisions as we do that in 2019 if we have asked the citizens of the state to let us know how strongly they feel about the right to health care and whether we ought to be taking that responsibility. We're going to move into this blind now. We're going to have those discussions in 2019 by saying, I met somebody who told me this, and I met somebody who told me that. I can play that game pretty well because I have somebody that tells me everything, so I can make up what I want to hear. But we've now lost the opportunity, if the decision you just made is a final opportunity, to be guided in that decision as we move forward with the wisdom of the citizens of this state. I trust the citizens of this state to help us in that decision. And I think we're making a terrible mistake not to give them the opportunity to tell us whether they really believe that universal access to health care is something that our citizens deserve and that we should take seriously as we consider how we move forward in dealing with the health care system. I'll be back in the next session. Although today it makes it me hard to think that that's the right decision, but I'll be back, and I'll be telling you what the citizens think. And you'll be telling me what the citizens think, and everybody else will be telling us what the citizens think, but we won't know what the citizens think. I do ask you one more time to move the bill, adopt the amendment, which is an improvement of the bill. Move the bill to the Rules Committee while we get some more information in the next two or three days, which we think will help that decision.
Thank you, Representative Greenlake. This is a passion that three of us also hold with you. We found that we still needed to do some language changes. There wasn't a pathway. Should I say a constitutional problem that we have in the Senate? And I'm heartbroken, but it's how it's turned out. Any other comments? Senator Beyer.
Well, I tend to agree. I do agree with Representative Greenlake. I really am disappointed that we're not moving forward with putting this out there, but I respect the decision that leadership has made. I guess the issue many have said is that without having a plan or an action, it's just not workable to move forward. I probably don't agree with that, but I feel strongly that we need to move towards a single-payer system, and I know the representative has been working towards that for many years now, and I applaud your steadfastness in doing that. I hope that your task force, and I'm assured that your task force will come up with a transition plan. I think the work you've done before will move us in that direction. Would have been nice to have the vote, but it is what it is.
I'll just tell the task force what the citizens want.
Hmm?
I'll just tell my task force what the citizens want.
All right. There's no further discussion.
One comment.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we all agree that health care should be an inalienable right for everyone. I'm concerned that you send it to the voters and the voters say yes and it comes back. At what expense do we pay for it? And we need the federal government to come to the table. I've always been a supporter of single-payer health care, maybe not in this situation that we have, a Medicare for all, get rid of Medicaid, streamline the government, and that would all have to be defined a little bit easier. But how do you pay for it once you approve it? And the lawsuits, and so I'm dedicated to continue working to improve our health care system so everybody has access to health care.
If I might comment, two comments to that. First of all, we have an amendment to the bill that puts that into some balance so it doesn't trade off health care against education and other public services. But the real issue is that if we organize a system that takes 4 million people into account, puts them into a single risk pool, and figures out how to provide efficient service, I think we can reduce the cost of health care in the state. And I think Senator Steiner Hayward's been doing some work exactly at that point. So the notion that it will cost more if we do things in an organized, systematic way is, I think, is a questionable assumption.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you. I'm one of the four chief sponsors of this bill who's sitting in this room right now, and I'm equally disappointed that we can't move this forward. Knowing that this was coming up this morning, I talked with my ultimate political consultant, otherwise known as my husband, last night about this, because not surprisingly, he and I share a lot of values. As many of you know, he's a retired emergency department nurse, was a paramedic before that, volunteer firefighter. He's done pretty much every 911. He's been a police officer. He's done pretty much every 911 job and seen what happens on the front lines. And he's a firm believer that everyone should have access to high-quality, affordable health care, and that the state does play a role in it. And I said, so if I asked you in theory, on a ballot or on a poll, do you believe everybody should have access to health care and that the state should play a significant role in doing that? He said, I would say yes. And I said, and if I asked you based on this text, and I include the language that we've been considering for the amendment, he said, well, how are you going to do that? And I said, well, we don't know yet. And he said, then I'm a no. And I said, why? And he said, because that's a pretty substantial undertaking for the state to take without any sense of how you're going to do it. And I said, well, then if we could come to you and say, here are some paths that we could take, and we've explored these, and here's what it would cost, and here's how employers could engage, and here's how we could use a public option or whatever it is, then would you vote yes on it? And he said, yes. Now, my husband is only one of 4.1 million people in this state, 2+ million voters. But he's been putting up with me as a legislator for a while and has been pretty engaged in these issues for a long time. And I think he's got a pretty good sense. And I don't think he's atypical. And so I would be even sadder if we put this forward and the voters said no, because I think that would bind us even more and make it even harder for us to move forward with some proposed pathways. So.
But Senator Hayward, the action that your committee is taking right now chains us to that kind of a comment. What do the citizens think? Well, I asked my husband. What do the citizens think? Well, I saw somebody at a town hall last week. I mean, we are condemned to be dealing with exactly that kind of point. It's useless information. Not to say your husband is useless. He's obviously.
I'll be sure to clarify that to him, Representative.
Okay, thank you, Representative Greenlake. And I just want you to know this is your last session committee meeting, correct? You'll be here for informationals.
Yes.
Senator DeBoer announced over the weekend he is not running for his seat. What, under duress of your wife?
I would never fault that. I enjoy working silently behind. I will be here voluntarily and working on health care, education, our budget, and PERS. So rather than do the minutia, and I find my whole time with lobbyists and special interest groups that take all the time, and I think we do not deal with the big issues such as what you're working on so hard.
Too bad you won't be back to help.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any other words? We're adjourned.